Accession number 28678, Mr. Dermot Rhodes, Reel 9. Now, what's the next thing? After leaving Australia with this rather amusing story of the deserters, what happens next?
We went to Japan. And Japan was quite an experience. There's very few of us have been there before. We were then flying the flag of the Admiral second in command of the Far East Fleet. One then Rear Admiral Hill Norton.
Is that Roger Hill Norton? There's two of them.
One was his son. Nick Hill Norton was his son.
So this is Roger.
This is no, it wasn't Roger. Hill Norton. Oh, I never thought of him by his Christian name because he was a sod as well. Another gunnery officer. He eventually became.
Well, what did you think of him?
Chief of the Defence Staff, I think, Admiral of the Fleet, Lord Hill Norton. He was again very, very sharp. My goodness, he had a bark quite as bad as his bite. But we didn't see much as the Admiral because he came to Japan for a specific reason. It was really the first big visit to the Japanese Maritime Self-Defense Force, which is the name of their navy that they're building up after the war. Japan, historically, had always got a very close connection with the Royal Navy. And these were the first, really since the war, first major efforts to sort of re-kindle that affinity we had with them. We were looked after extremely well because this also coincided with a visit by Princess Alexandra to the British exhibition there. It was Meet in Britain Week or something. So we entertained. There was one member of the Japanese royal family, Princess Chichibu, who was an Anglophile and spoke perfect English and was a great lover of all things English. And she came on board, Princess Alexandra came on board to inspect the ship and the gun, to talk to the sailors. She was lovely as well, a great fan of Princess Alexandra. And she went ashore to open and look at an exhibition and shopping interest in a mall in Tokyo. And I was sent with 40 sailors to provide a street lining guard of honor for her. And we paraded outside this store complex. It was like a shopping arcade or a mall. She disappeared in nowhere, and I soon got a worried-looking aide came out and said, I think you'd better come with some sailors because the princess is being mobbed. They're so keen, so many Japanese, she can't move. So I went in there with my sailors, not all 40, about a dozen of them, and we fought our way in there through these people. And we formed a sort of cordon then to give us some space to breathe with linked arms, and we did that, And so the visit was less of a shambles than it might have been. The poor old Japanese were covered with confusion that they'd great loss of face and that they'd failed to be able to contain their situation. They'd never realised it was going to be as popular as this. And all these Japanese were desperately keen to see this rather pretty girl at close up. So we saved the day. So I got thanked profusely by her after that and then went back to the ship with my 40 sailors. And I enjoyed the rest of the Japan as well we could. But it was quite difficult not speaking another language. And, of course, there was no facility in Japan. None of the signs or anything were in English or whatever. But it was certainly an experience.
Did you see the Japanese Navy? I forgot what you said it was called. The Defence Force.
No.
You didn't actually get to see that. It was Hill Norton who'd see
it. He went off to see them. We welcomed the various Japanese admirals and senior officers on board, but I didn't get to see any of their. They were fairly limited at the time.
Now, what happened next?
The other thing that happened while we were there is that we were anchored off in a bay, in the bay there, and a storm blew up. And around us, all sorts of, I mean, there were about 40 or 50 ships anchored around. They started dragging anchors. And we were there in the middle watching these ships being blown. We hoped they weren't going to be blown on us. But we had steam raised ready to go if necessary. So that was an exciting evening.
Right.
Then I left the ship.
But That's just the end of your period of service.
Yeah.
So this would be you're on board at 2 years, 64 to 66.
Yes.
So would you leave her in 65 or 66? It's always difficult to.
I left her in 65.
And what was the next thing for your career? I mean, what were you expecting would happen?
Well, what I was rather hoping for a bit of time, sure, or in UK, because I've been abroad a hell of a lot, actually. So I got married in the meantime.
Now,
I'm still a lieutenant. I got married in 1963.
Now, was that approved of? I mean, because that's quite young for a sailor.
Well, in those days, you did not get marriage license until you were 25. So if you got married earlier than that, you just got no marriage allowance. And there was quite a big difference between those who were married and who weren't. Now, at the age of 25, you were then qualified for marriage allowance, and I was 25, I think, probably just then. But you still then, officers, still, traditionally, had to write officially to the commanding officer requesting permission to marry, which I did.
And he gave it, obviously.
And he gave it.
So you were married, so what happened next?
With pleasure. Then... Well, I came back to the staff of HMS Excellent, the gunnery school.
Now, what were you going to be?
As a lieutenant. And I was going to be a staff officer. I was going to be the course officer for sub-lieutenants, the course that I'd done 4 years previously.
So where were you? Did you have, you didn't have married quarters, or you did have?
No, I rented a house. Well, I mean, there were so few married quarters then, there was a long list. So I rented a house and commuted daily to HMS Excellent then, and ran this long course. I knew then I would have to go back to sea.
Now, what do you remember about that period? How long were you doing it for? Just a year? Or was it also
no, I think...
65.
Yeah, perhaps a year. Perhaps
65
a year.
To 66?
Yeah.
And how did it go? What was the job like?
Great. Loved it.
Why? What was good about it?
Well, I like the ethos of the place. I'd been through it. I'd done the course. And the staff, the senior staff, both ratings and officers, were terrific. Very supportive. Very amusing, and I have nothing but praise and admiration for them all.
And anything happened, or what did the course officer actually do? Was there much to it?
Well, of course, the great thing about being a course officer there is that instead of wearing a battle dress and blouse and white gaiters and boots, and I wore 5 uniforms and black patent leather gaiters. Great stuff. As a staff officer and a course officer, you had to do a certain amount of teaching. I mean, you looked after their welfare and administration and a certain amount of teaching, sort of basic stuff at that sort of level.
And nothing much happened then? A routine period?
I think it was fairly routine, except for one slightly amusing incident, where everybody, you're absolutely... Discipline was down to the T, and anything or anybody senior to you, you saluted, and you expected a salute back, and it should be a proper salute and a smart salute, and if it wasn't, you'd get pulled up. And being on the staff, you were responsible for maintaining discipline. Now, we had at that time, an international long course at the island. These were... officers outside the Commonwealth, and at that time South Africa had left the Commonwealth, who still came for training, and they wore the old long course uniform of white gaiters and a battle dress blouse and their badge of rank tabs on their shoulders. And if you were, let's get this straight. Officers on course who were equivalent in rank to staff officers always saluted staff officers. But I remember walking to the wardroom one day and I saw this figure doubling towards a bulky figure in white gaiters and battle dress blouse, and I recognised him as a South African, and we're on the international long course. And as he came past, he didn't do anything. And I was just about to yell at him, and he yelled at me. And I thought, what about you? And he said, I'm senior to you, you should salute me. I said, what are you talking about, senior? And I saw to my horror, he'd been promoted, and he was a lieutenant commander. And I said, well, you were a lieutenant a few days ago. He said, well, I've been promoted now. I said, right, sir, said I, distinctly, and told him to carry on. And I was complaining about this to my boss, who was the gunnery commander, who was the senior gunnery officer on the island in charge of training. And he was a great chap, Ruddy Falconer. And I said, so-and-so picked me up for not saluting him. And he laughed. Bloody right, he said. Bloody right. You should have had your eyes out, looking out of this guy. That man who picked me up for not saluting me was later arrested as a Russian spy. Commodore Dieter Gerhardt, South African Navy. I knew there's something rotten about him. Not quite right. That was some years later, of course, he was arrested. It was a lovely time. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Any other incidents from the time?
Well, no, I don't think so. My first daughter was born. So that's an incident. Yeah.
Had the course change at all? I mean, you know,
had the course changed?
Yes, not really. Developments as new weapons and things.
Oh yes, it was being updated with regard to practices and weapons, but the actual format of the course was the same.
So what next?
Now after that, in 1966, I was appointed as gunnery officer of HMS Tartar.
This time you are the gunnery officer.
I was the gunnery officer.
And your rank still
HMS Tartar was, well, I became, was it that year or the following year?
While you were aboard, you became it.
Yeah, I think it was that year, actually. Following year, I became lieutenant commander. Tartar was a tribal class frigate.
Now, what was a tribal class? Just explain what the nature of the ship. What was she like? What armament did you have? What was she like?
Tribal class frigates were a class of frigates, and I think there were 8 of them. There was a very famous class of destroyers during the war called the tribal class, but this was a frigate class. And they were very, design-wise, extraordinary ships. They were single-screw, twin-funneled ships with a single 4.5-inch gun forward and a single 4.5-inch gun aft. A couple of 40 millimetres, SeaCat missile system, and a helicopter, the Wasp helicopter. And they were specifically designed, their air conditioning rail, for service in the Middle East, in the Persian Gulf. Now, our maximum speed, single screw, was only about 23 knots. Which, compared with some of the destroyers and frigates that used to leap around at 30 knots, was not excessive, we thought. We were told, we always reckoned that we were there mainly to impress the Arabs any other local natives, and because we got 2 funnels instead of 1, we went twice as fast as anybody else. That's why we had 2 funnels. In fact, we were revolutionary design because we were the first gas turbine driven ships. We had a combined, we had a steam turbine for cruising and a gas turbine for boost, extra speed. So that was the Tartar. Normally, now Tartar, ever since she'd been built a few years before, had always been one of the Caribbean ships, base ships, and we all look forward to going back to the West Indies. And the first thing the captain had to tell us when we joined was we weren't actually going to the West Indies at all. We were going to the Middle East. person golf.
Bit of a disappointment.
Which was a bit of a disappointment, as you quite rightly surmise. Our captain was another great chap, a chap called Cameron Rusby, famous signals officer who became a vice admiral.
Rusby,
R-U-S-B-Y, Cameron, C.
What was he like?
Gentleman, lovely man. He was extremely distinguished. He looked more like a very distinguished ambassador, lean, aquiline. I can't think I ever heard him raise his voice in anger or in extreme. He just got everything done, speaking quietly and trusting his team. And he was a wonderful man to be with, an absolute delight.
Now, which route did you take out to the Persian Gulf? Was it?
No. Yes, it was Persian Gulf. Sorry. We went out via the Cape again, South Africa.
So the long way.
Yeah. Which was great. We had no complaints. We stopped Sierra Leone to fuel. On to Simonstown for a few days, and then on to the Middle East. And there, of course, we had a base at Bahrain. There was a RN Commodore in charge of the base there, which provided limited sort of docking facilities, but very good recreational facilities. I shall never forget my first taste of the officers' pool. There was just nothing much for the officers, really, a sort of glorified clubhouse and a pool, but the pool was refrigerated. Sailors also had a pool as well. And so we were based in Bahrain, and we did our tour of the Trucial Oman States. And that was fascinating, looking back now, on what we met. We went to Muscat. Now, Muscat was still in the Dark Ages then. The Sultan, who was the father of the present Sultan, still reigned supreme. He operated a very strict regime in the town of Muscat, and indeed in his country. Women were not allowed to wear short sleeve dresses or dresses that came above their sort of knees. They were not allowed to drive. They weren't allowed out after 8 o'clock at night. They weren't allowed in certain commercial positions. There was a lot of expatriate. Most of the banks, commerce and businesses were run by expatriate Brits or Brits on secondment. And the whole place was sort of hundreds of years old. Absolutely fascinating. Tradition there was for ships to paint their names on the cliffs and the harbour entrance. And of course, we all did this. So we spent a very intriguing and interesting few days there. This was long before they had a navy or an air force. The SAS, I think, were operating out of there, and the Trucial Oman Scouts were operating there. There's a certain amount of unrest up in the hills. We then went on our way. I remember we went up some funny sort of gulf. I can't remember the name of it. It was supposed to be the hottest place in the world. And I remember us frying eggs on the deck. Just putting the eggs down on the deck and they fried up. And I think we checked the temperature and it was something like 130-odd degrees Fahrenheit.
Now, how did you cope with that level of heat? I mean, I know you'd been out
there. Well, we coped majorly by not staying there too long. We just went up into this. I mean, there was no habitation, no houses, nothing. We just went there just to say we'd been on what was supposed to be the hottest place on Earth. But the ship was in air condition, but even that, it was a struggle to cope then. And then we came out of there.
The ship was.
We came out of there. Then we visited Doha, Abu Dhabi. We took the Commodore in to pay calls on Local sheikhs ashore, quite often on landing him on beaches. So he'd leap aboard in his pajama, you know, his white full tropicals of sores, into about 6 inches or a foot of water. He'd go off and have his sit down cross-legged and share his bowl of mutton stew with the sheikh, carefully sitting on his left hand, eating with his right, and swallowing the sheep's eyeball when it was passed to him as a great delicacy. And the rest of us, we accompanied him from time to time, and we were also... Of course, having a helicopter was a great asset as well.
Now, we haven't really talked about helicopters. What were they for? What was so good about the helicopters?
The Devonshire helicopter, the Wessex 3, was anti-submarine. The Wasp was the Tartar's helicopter. That carried an anti-ship missile, but also could carry an anti-submarine depth bomb. The helicopter was also used for, I won't call it transportation, but the movement of personnel if required, if other conditions, say weather or anything, stop, but you're sending boats in or anything like that. Bearing in mind the limitations, certainly of the Wasp, where you could only get, I think, apart from the pilot, three other people in there if you were lucky.
Now, so you're going around the Trucial Oman states.
Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Kuwait. We went to all these on visits. We did patrols in the Gulf.
Now, what were the Gulf patrols?
Well,
about?
Then I think Iran and Iraq were having a bit of a punch up, so we just had to just watch. We were looking for smugglers, sometimes pirates. We never found any pirates or smugglers, actually, but hopefully we deterred them.
What was a typical patrol like? I mean, how far would you go? What would you do?
Oh, we'd take about... It was normally down towards the south end of the Gulf, which is the sort of Straits of Hormuz down there. Or is that the other... Oh, gosh, my geography is going a bit... Anyway, it's southern Gulf. And we'd know, from intelligence, we'd know the sorts of places to keep an eye on and look for. And they normally provided a certain amount of interest, if not activity or action. We occasionally found the junk that had broken down and was drifting around, which we tried to repair or maybe tow into a local harbour or safety. We did a lot of cooperation with the RAF.
Now, how did that work? How efficiently? How was the liaison managed? You see what I mean?
Well, the RAF had a base in the Gulf, and we normally like to work with them for exercise purposes, occasionally, because they had Shackletons down there, of which more a little later. Shackletons were very good at dropping mail when we were on patrol, especially when we went down to do... We did a couple of Biro patrols, which could last up to 4, 5, 6 weeks. The Biro patrol was a patrol carried out under the auspices of the United Nations, and it was designed to stop oil being smuggled through the port of Beira to Rhodesia, which is where Ian Smith was maintaining his illegal regime. And we said we'd carry out a patrol to stop this happening.
That's
B-E-I-R-A. And this patrol went on for quite some time and was quite a major aspect of maritime life. It was always a frigate. One or two frigates on patrol. Occasionally, one of the aircraft carriers would come and do a bit of a patrol. But we used to stop, or we used to have to identify every ship going into Beira. We used to, if we were not happy with their identity and whether they were legal, then we used to stop and search them. And we had authority to do this with a boarding party. We also had rules of engagement. We were actually authorised to open fire if they refused to stop.
Now, did they ever do that? Or
we never had to open fire. We used to practice on other our own other ships. One or two did try, but they didn't get very far. When the first rounds went across their bows, they all stopped. But you could spend, I mean, I think over, we did two almost 5-week patrols up there, patrolling 10 miles off the coast, 10 knots. It could be quite boring, depending on the amount of traffic coming in. We used to do a lot of deck games there, and this is when I mentioned earlier, playing occasionally. We used to play deck football with a weighted sort of medicine ball thing, and that used to go over the side, and the captain had got. Gave the officer watch blanket permission to treat it as a man overboard, and we would immediately swing, he'd swing the ship round and we'd go and pick it up, which was very good training for us.
And deck football, just a normal game of football, with, except with this?
Yes, well, limited pitch with this very heavy ball, which hopefully we used to rig some sort of netting to try and stop it going over the side. And we used to have games with other ships, the other patrol ships, from time to time, come together for an hour or two and then exchange a number of personnel to go and play deck hockey or uckers, which is the naval form of Ludo and various other things, for a trophy called the Byra Bucket, which was an ornery mess deck bucket which had been specially decorated and painted.
And did you win it?
We did. We did for one short time, but we certainly didn't have it when we left the patrol. And we used to get our mail dropped by RAF Shackletons in canisters, dropped into the sea, and we used to go and pick it up.
Now, how far a day would it be?
What?
The mail?
Oh, could be. It was probably no more than a week. The mail service was quite good out there. The old British Forster's post office was a good service. So that was the Byra Patrol.